Sportsnet today. Listen on the air, online, on the Sportsnet app, and always on your smart speaker. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
It's a happy Wednesday. Welcome to the show. This is Sportsnet today on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Coming at you live from the Sportsnet 960 World Controls in downtown Calgary. I am Logan Gordon, joined once again by Patrick Dumas. Patty, good day, sir.
Good day, Logo. It's a beautiful day. It'll start a little later, but that's all right.
Said a little Blue Jays baseball for you there. Jays unable to finish the two-game sweep of their AL East rivals, the Tampa Bay Rays.
Yeah, you say Kikuchi was, I was like Kikuchi start. Yeah. Very inconsistent. Had some good, had some bad. Wasn't all his fault. But hey, you know what? Split with the Rays, not the worst. Yankees lost as well, but you know what? Coming from yesterday, this is probably not what you want to see. They didn't go out and address the rotation, and with the back end of the rotation being as inconsistent, then before the game, you get Ross Stripling's news that he's on the 15-day IL. It's going to be some bullpen help here, and that's where the additions yesterday helped.
Yes, that's what we're expecting. Most, if not all, of the Blue Jays. Four major league pieces should join the team tomorrow in Minnesota.
Yeah, we have. We'll have Whit Merrifield should be joining them. The pitchers from Miami and Anthony Bass and Zach Pop, as well as Mitch White, acquired from the Dodgers. I know they optioned him because they had to, but he will join the club probably being as a sixth starter as they moved out Max Castillo in that trade for Whit Merrifield yesterday. But it's going to be a messy time here, especially in games where the offense isn't going like you'd like it to see. You know, two runs, you get the run early. Teoscar Hernandez is the only run scored today, gets the home run as well, but it's not what you want. Four innings out of Yusei Kikuchi, you can't get four innings out of your starter and expect the team to win, especially when you're only scoring two runs. And then the bullpen was off. Simber wasn't that great. Like I said, just get through it. Tampa's been a tough team. That was their first win, I believe their first win since the All-Star break. Ryan Yarbrough has been good. It was an opener start for them, but Yarbrough was good for them. But it's, you know, it's a little bit of a letdown, you know, coming off the high. You know, you get the trade deadline at the end there, and I know a lot of fans weren't the greatest, but happiest, but yeah.
It happens. We'll talk some more Blue Jays a little bit later on. We'll talk some trade deadline just after 4 o'clock with Julia Cruz from MLB.com. But we have a very busy day for you coming up later on, just after 4:30. We're going to chat with one of the newest Calgary Flames to sign up a contract extension. Yesterday, Oliver Shillington during the show re-signed with the Calgary Flames on a two-year deal to avoid arbitration. Then later on in the evening, same thing for Andrew Mangiapane. He signs a three-year deal with the Flames, and we'll chat with Andrew just after 4:30 and get a chance to pick his brain on coming back to the Flames for three more years. But that wasn't the only piece of news that the Flames dropped yesterday. We've been waiting for this one for a while, Patrick, and we got it official yesterday that the Flames AHL affiliate coming to Calgary next season would indeed be called the Calgary Wranglers. I love the name. Mm-hmm. I love the branding. I can't wait to see more. And the man in charge of the Flames AHL affiliate, formerly the Stockton Heat, now the Calgary Wranglers, is Flames Assistant General Manager Brad Pascal. And he's kind enough to give us some time this afternoon to chat about some things with the farm team. Brad, thanks for doing this afternoon. How are you, man?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on.
No, really appreciate it. Big news yesterday as we finally learned the new name for Calgary's latest franchise, the Calgary Wranglers. How does that sound to you?
Yeah, really good. I mean, a work in progress, and you know, we felt yesterday was a good time to announce it. We're really excited. We're excited to have our American League team here in Calgary. You know, to have the tradition in our market of the Wranglers name. You know, we just thought it was a good fit organizationally and with a little bit of history in the city. And, you know, I think we're all excited about the logo and about the branding.
Brad, why was bringing the team's AHL affiliate to Calgary the right move for the organization?
Well, I think if you look at all teams in the American League and the NHL over the last 8-9 years, there's been a migration of getting closer to your NHL parent club, and really, there's so many positives of it. You know, players just having one residence, and they're either reporting at this time to this rink or this time to this rink to practice, is a positive from a player standpoint and a logistics standpoint. And, you know, there's just so many organizational synergies in the way of travel, in the way of salary cap management, and, you know, quite frankly, I think just overseeing and to have more face time with management, with NHL staff, with your with player development, with your minor league players and coaching staff. You know, we're no different than many other teams in the league that thought that all those positive outweighed perhaps, you know, a situation where we were a flight away. And, you know, we know that this is a tremendous market for hockey. And, yeah, we're really excited about coming. But those are some of the key reasons why we made the switch.
How much did that COVID season, having the AHL team come up for that short period of time, how much did that set up this move? I imagine, Brad, that gave you guys sort of the first idea that, hey, this is something that, you know, we like. We obviously know it's not the same during the COVID season, but I have a feeling that's sort of where this might have started.
You know what? I would say a little bit, but not a lot.
Okay.
At that point, we were just in survival mode.
Yes.
We with the obvious of the border closures and this and that, you know, we wanted to give our players an opportunity to compete and further their development, even if it was in a 30-day. A 30-game shortened season, which is what we did in a Canadian AHL division. So it's hard to say that, you know, that was one of the big reasons or a tipping point. I wouldn't necessarily say that, just because it was so different and so unique, and we were quite frankly in survival mode. But yeah, I wouldn't completely dismiss your comment. But you know, I think as we've looked at this over the last, you know, 8 years and said, hey, you know, we really like it and Stockton's working well. The California division, travel's not too bad, but, you know, what are the pros about having the team here? And I think that was more of a deciding factor than a shortened COVID season for us.
Okay. Yeah. And I find it interesting. The team had some great on ice success in Stockton, but at the end of the day, did it just make more sense to bring the team up to Canada and have them, you know, a little bit closer to home? Because I think when that move happened, there was so much movement in the California division, and, you know, a lot of teams in the Pacific division obviously make their home there, but we've sort of seen a shift in how the AHL's put things together that probably made this easier for you guys.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's like I said before, you know, there's just so many organizational synergies that, you know, we're really excited about. And, you know, we just feel that there's so many pros that outweighs the cons is when you make a decision like this, and to have the team so close, you know, it's something, as I mentioned, we're excited and think it's going to be a positive thing organizationally. And probably most importantly for the development of our players.
How proud of the group were you last year and what they were able to do in the Calder Cup playoffs? It was a really strong season for Mitch Love and his group.
Yeah, extremely proud. You know, from the coaching staff led by Mitch, as a first-year pro coach, to, you know, provide the leadership that he did and win Coach of the Year, you know, to be able to work side-by-side with him during that process, it was excellent. And, you know, if you look at our – and for us, that we sit back at the end of the season and look at our roster and as our players, it's – you know, we saw progression right across the board. And, you know, a number of guys had career years from points, but – you know, what they did from their defensive game and, you know, their strength and conditioning and just maturity overall, it was something we were proud with as an organization, but, you know, for me personally as well, you know, to sit back after the fact and say, geez, you know what, we did some good things there.
Talk about Mitch, because it seemed like, you know, such a fit. I know him and Pat had their weekly talks on Flamestop, but Mitch seems like a guy that, you know, has been a coach for much longer than he's actually been. It's hard to remember that it wasn't that long ago that Mitch was, you know, still in pro hockey, but he seems to be able to develop a bond with his players almost immediately, Brad. What sort of drew the organization's interest in Mitch? And I got to imagine, you talked about it a bit there, it seemed like it was just a great fit for him in the organization last year.
Yeah, Mitch, you know, Mitch is a first-year pro coach. You know, obviously had a lot of experience coming in before that as an assistant and then as a head coach in Saskatoon and some involvement with international hockey as well. But, you know, I think Mitch's overall, you know, his the way he communicates, the way that he cares about his players and his staff, you know, but at the same time, you know where you stand with Mitch. Mitch is, you know, he's a detailed, demanding coach, but at the same time, very fair. And, you know, Mitch has a presence behind the bench, in the dressing room, in meetings, has a great demeanor and a great pro approach. And, you know, I feel and we feel as an organization, he's a tremendous, tremendous young coach.
I wanted to ask you about some of the player movement we've seen this offseason for the team and, you know, losing a couple of key veteran guys off of the squad last year. I think of Glenn Godden and Byron Fraze that come to mind when you talk about guys that were leaders for Stockton last year. And now, you know, will the organization, I know you've added some guys today and we'll talk about that, but how much of it is, you know, looking for your guys to sort of fill in those roles and continue their development when you lose veteran guys on AHL teams?
Yeah, it's, you know, everybody, I think you look at every American League team, you never have the same team. And even I guess in the NHL, you could say that same thing. You're always going to have changes, but especially in the American League of guys that either move on, you know, up to the NHL or move on in free agency or go to Europe or what have you. But, you know, we had some great leaders. We had great leaders in Byron Fraze, Kevin Gravel, amongst others, Justin Kirkland, and you know these guys, you know, end up leaving for various reasons, and you know, I know their experience with us was great, but you know, we feel that, you know, some of the young players that we've had are you know, will take on bigger leadership roles, and we feel that, you know, with some signings over the last month or so, that we've brought in some new leadership and some new veteran presence, which I think is going to be good overall for our group.
Calgary Flames Assistant General Manager Brad Pascal joining us here on Sportsnet today. I'm Logan Gordon, joined by Patrick Dumont. Patrick?
Brad, talk about the move from Stockton to Calgary. Just how much of how much goes into a relocation from California all the way up here?
Yeah, I mean, other than calling a moving company and have them drive everything up here, you know, you know, it really, it's staff relocation, you know, them and their families. I mean, it's a change of scenery for everybody, organizing that. And then, you know, living and breathing here in Calgary, of just, you know, organizing our, you know, practice times and game times and schedule and what have you. So lots of moving parts. You know, as an organization, we've moved before, yeah. So we have some experience in that, and hopefully we're here for the long haul.
For sure. Now, you mentioned the practice time. Like, obviously, the Saddledome is going to be filled this year. They got the Hitmen, the Roughnecks, obviously the parent club, the Flames. You guys now in town, are you going to be taking advantage of some of the area rinks around Calgary to use for practice time? I know the Flames have used Winsport in the past.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, those are things that we're working on. We're working on a plan, making sure that, you know, that we run a professional environment for these guys and that we have consistent training and practice times. It's all, I mean, this league's all about development and player development, and that's a big focus overall for us. So we'll make sure that, you know, that remains a priority, that we take care of those things as an organization and as a franchise here with their American League team.
Now, Kansas City, they're out as your guys' ECHL affiliate. When do you hope to have word on a new affiliate by?
I'd say later this month.
Okay.
We've had a number of good discussions, but yeah, we definitely will have an ECHL affiliate. And like I say, hope to announce that officially later this month.
Brad, just wanted to ask you about some of the guys that were announced today to AHL contracts, including a very familiar face in Brett Sutter, who I imagine probably fills that leadership role a lot in the AHL's team.
Yeah, Brett. Hey, Brett is he's a tremendous pro. A player that I have a lot of respect for. He was with the organization here prior to my time here, but you know, having the opportunity to see him play against him when we were in Stockton when he was in Ontario. He's known throughout hockey, but especially in the American League, about being such a tremendous leader and still a great player. Obviously, really detailed in his play. Such a reliable player. He has over 1,000 pro games. And, we're really happy to add him into the mix, as mentioned before, and, you know, of his leadership ability. He's a character player and somebody that we really feel that can help our group, excel both on and off the ice.
I did want to take a chance to ask about a couple of guys that really excelled in Stockton last year while I've got you. The name that we get a lot here, obviously, is Dustin Wolf. Fans in Calgary can't stop talking about him. This just seems to be a young man that takes everything in stride and has never wavered at the challenge of stepping up, whether it was in junior hockey to pro. What can you say about Dustin and what you saw from him in year one as a pro in Stockton?
Well, this guy is a driven young man that loves the game and is ultra prepared. And, he just continued his evolution of winning and winning awards. And you know, what stands out for me is just his competitive nature above all. This guy in practice or in games, Dustin is, always wants to get better, always wants to improve. And it is driven to succeed, and that's what he did right from game one to our last game of the Calder Cup playoffs. He's a driven young man, and someone that we feel has a bright future ahead of him.
What about Jacob Pelche? Another guy there, first year pro, seemed to have no trouble at all adapting to the pro style, and. You know, now all of a sudden we're talking about Jacob, looking towards perhaps making some noise in an NHL training camp.
Yeah, definitely. Like Jacob is he's a player that, it's sometimes a first year pro. You have a lot of success in junior hockey or college hockey. You come in and perhaps take the league you feel you're going to take advantage of the league and have success. And it's a hard league. And I'd say Jacob's wake-up call maybe happened the first two games and then quickly figured it out. And then from there on in just, did nothing but succeed and progressed his overall game. He's an energetic voice in our room. And he was the driver of our team, quite frankly, using his pace and his speed. Tenacious on the forecheck, tenacious on pucks, and obviously has some ability to make plays. But he was a relied upon player that had some success. And, for him, the message has been it's he has to have a big summer. For him to continue to succeed, in the American League, but more importantly, to push for a full-time NHL job is getting stronger. And we know that Jacob is going to take advantage of this time this summer to work on those areas.
How excited are you guys to potentially be adding Cole Schwint to the lineup on a regular basis?
Yeah, I mean he was a player that was a key part in our acquisition with Florida. A young player that had a great first year in Charlotte. In the American League, obviously a player that the Florida Panthers really liked as well. We're really excited. We're excited to have him into the mold. We feel that, he has the size and ability to be a really good pro, and looking forward to having him in our group and in our mix starting here this fall.
I imagine it's going to be an interesting change for your day-to-day coming up in the fall when hockey gets going down to have the group so much closer and involved. Is it going to be a little bit of a different day-to-day for you, Brad, when it comes to running the farm team? I imagine you'll be spending a lot more time in the city of Calgary.
Yeah, I think my flight miles will go down a little bit, which is okay with me. And my family will be hopefully more excited.
Yeah.
But it's you know, organizationally, as I mentioned, we're excited to have the team closer on a personal level, but you know, most importantly on an organizational level, and you know, to have, you know, more ability for our full management team, NHL coaches to get more eyes and on a more regular basis to our young players and our staff, you know, we feel it can be nothing but a positive thing. And for both us, but organizationally and for the players involved as well. So yeah, we're excited. And yeah, the day to day, I mean, it's going to be new for everybody. So we'll have to figure that out. But, you know, I know there'll be lots of hockey here in Calgary.
So that mix is something that you guys aren't afraid of. It's not, you're going to look at this as two organizations that, yes, are obviously in different leagues, but you're going to, you know, share intel and probably, you know, get a chance to, hey, if Daryl gets a chance to see a guy or meet with a guy, you're going to take advantage of that. I was curious how, you know, if there was going to be any sort of separation between the two as you interact on a day-to-day basis.
Oh, for sure. We're operating on different schedules and different teams and different focuses. So, you know, make no doubt about it. It's, you know, there'll be a line drawn in the sand and everybody's taking care of their own business. But, you know, I think that there will be crossover from time to time. And as I mentioned, whether that's sitting down with a player or whether that's just eyes on watching games, watching practices, where maybe they wouldn't get that opportunity or wouldn't do it on, you know, be on a more regular basis by having the team here. Those are the positives that I'm talking about.
Nice. Just last one for you, Brett. I guess just any logistics for when you're moving the team up. Are you expecting to have most of your hockey ops staff and coaching staff that was in Stockton make the move to Calgary?
Yes, correct. Our whole hockey staff remains intact. Our whole coaching staff remains intact. You know, our key, our head trainer, head therapist as well, will be making the trip up here. So yeah, we're excited with that group. They're you know, overall as a group, they really excel well together and work well together. And you know, we feel that the transition to have them here will be seamless, and they're all excited to be in Calgary as well.
Awesome. Brad, thanks so much for the time. We really do appreciate it. Looking forward to getting the Wranglers to town here. I know if you haven't noticed already, the fans are really abuzz with it, and I think it's going to be a great opportunity to have the AHL team here in Calgary. Enjoy the rest of your summer, and we'll chat with you a little bit more in the fall when hockey's back and running.
Yeah, great, guys. Thanks for having me, and yeah, have a great rest of the week here.
There you go. Thank you. Thanks, Brad. Brad Pascal, assistant general manager of the Calgary Flames, and, of course, the general manager of their AHL affiliate, no longer the Stockton Heat, Patrick, but the Calgary Wranglers, and some interesting logistics to go over. You mentioned, you know, you talked to him a bit about, you know, actually making the move and what that's like, and you can tell from Brad's voice there, this is a group that's very excited to get this done, and excited. I was curious to ask that question about the crossover. Was this going to be a situation where, look, this, you know, the Wranglers are the Wranglers and the Flames are the Flames, and unless you're moving up or moving down, you know, don't take 2 seconds to worry about it. That doesn't seem to be the way the organization's going about it. They're going to use whatever resources are available to benefit both groups.
Use it to your advantage. Obviously, NHL facilities and being around NHL clubs, they have, you know, better workout routines, better access to video and coaching and whatnot. It'll be great. Like I said, it'll be good for the players, keeping one residence, not worrying about trying to find a home here and going down to Stockton and whatnot. It'll be all good. They'll be living in the same place. Good for their families, good for the coaches. It's good to have the continuity, and you see it across the NHL. I mean, Winnipeg with Manitoba, and Vancouver with Abbotsford. Toronto has their club in-house. Ottawa's nearby, so same with Montreal. So the Canadian clubs are keeping their AHL clubs close to home. Obviously, economic-wise, it cuts down there with the travel. So it's good all around. I mean, you saw the crowds in Stockton might have been not the greatest. So, you know, maybe giving it up here, you might get a little bit boost there. Wise getting a little more in the money pockets there. But you know what? It's good for everybody that the AHL club's in town.
Thanks again to Brad Pascal for spending some time with us this afternoon. Really appreciate that from the Flames assistant GM checking in with everybody after the announcement yesterday. I know plenty of people had you know, a ton of questions for, you know, what was going to be of the Wranglers, how was the setup going to work, and hopefully we could do our best to answer those questions with Brad this afternoon. We'll take a break, come back on the other side. It's a busy start to the show. Don't miss it. A little bit later on, Andrew Mangiapane, after signing his 3-year contract extension, he's going to chat with us just after 4:30. We've got MLB trade deadline thoughts and Blue Jays thoughts with Julia Cruz of MLB.com. And next, we'll chat some CFL with John Hodge of 3 Down Nation. CFL week just about to begin. Some interesting storylines for the Calgary Stampeders, and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers look to remain undefeated when they take on the Montreal Alouettes. We'll chat with John Hodge next when Sportsnet 960 returns.
Back to Sportsnet today on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Week 9 of CFL action officially kicks off tomorrow night in Montreal. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers look to move to 9-0 as they take on the Alouettes. Friday night, your Calgary Stampeders in the nation's capital getting set to take on the Ottawa Red Blacks. And then a Saturday doubleheader of football, a Battle of Ontario between Hamilton and Toronto. Edmonton in BC to take on Nathan Rourke and the Lions. To chat all things CFL, we go down to the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Welcome in our friend from 3 Down Nation, John Hodge, this afternoon. John, thanks for doing this as always, man. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
We're doing great. Appreciate the time as always. Curious what you made of last week's big showdown on Saturday night between the Stampeders and the undefeated Winnipeg Blue Bombers.
Well, I think at the end of the day, the real winners, and I appreciate Stampeders fans are disappointed with the end result, but I think the biggest winners were CFL fans. I mean, to me, that was one of the best regular season games that I can remember watching over the last 20 years. I mean, they had 7 lead changes. There were no missed field goals, very few penalties, no sacks, no turnovers. Both teams played exceptionally well, and I thought it was just a great showcase of CFL football. Obviously, again, I know Stampeders fans would have liked to see the result go the other way, but you know, as much as they're 0-2 against Winnipeg, I think Calgary has now shown twice that they can at least hang with Winnipeg and could potentially upset the Bombers in their third and final meeting later on in the year.
Wanted to start with the Stampeders and a couple of the interesting storylines around this team. They released veteran defensive back Raheem Wilson yesterday. That raised some eyebrows around here, especially given the fact that Trey Roberson went down in that game against Winnipeg. Has that caught anybody's attention across the league when Wilson's name was on the notice of being released?
Well, I know it certainly caught my attention. I reached out to some sources, and I was unable to find anybody who indicated anything to the effect of the decision being anything but football related. I didn't receive communication from anybody who said, "Oh, yeah, there was this off-field issue, that off-field issue." It seems to have simply been a football decision. But you're absolutely right. It was a big surprise for not only the reason of, you know, Raheem Wilson playing well in past seasons. He's been a full-time starter in Calgary since 2019 as a rookie. But Trey Roberson, exactly, at that boundary cornerback spot. We know that Raheem Wilson has bounced around that secondary over the last few years. He's played some safety. He's played some halfback. But that field side cornerback spot was where he started with the Stamps in 2019. You know, if you can play field corner, you can play boundary corner. And so it was definitely a surprise for me to see him released. He's yet to resurface elsewhere, but obviously the Stampeders must have somebody waiting in the wings. Otherwise, they would not have made this move. And that's something the Stamps have always done well. They've always had the next man up, and I'm interested to see what that depth chart will look like when it comes out tomorrow.
Stamps play Ottawa on Friday, like I mentioned, coming in, and despite being down a couple of key veterans at practice today. This has to seem like a big game for the Stampeders all of a sudden, with the Lions passing them at 5-1, and you know that lead on Winnipeg already growing after those back-to-back wins.
Yeah, it can't be understated. I mean, obviously the Ottawa Redblacks at 1-6 have not had a stellar start to the season. However, Caleb Evans has put two really good games together back-to-back. You know, he's moving the football well. He's protecting it. He didn't do a lot of that last year as a rookie. He had a lot of turnovers, threw a lot of picks. This season, he has been much improved in that regard, taking good care of the football. And so, you know, if you look at the standings, you've got BC there. And I don't think the ship has completely sailed on Calgary catching Winnipeg. You never know what will happen over the marathon that is an 18-game regular CFL season. But, you know, if you're the Stampeders and you can't get to first place, obviously the next place you want to be is second, and still getting that all-important home playoff game. And, you know, trailing the BC Lions with Nathan Rourke playing the way that he is playing, you know, you certainly don't want to fall behind. And, you know, looking at the schedule this week, you'd have to think the BC Lions are going to win. They're playing at home against the Edmonton Elks, who they blasted at BC Play Stadium in week one by a score of 59-15. So it's a huge game for the Stampeders. It's not a divisional game, but that doesn't matter in this case, I don't think. You got to win this one. At the very least, keep pace with BC and look for your head-to-head matchups later in the year to try to leap over those Lions.
Jenny with John Hodge, Three Down Nation here on Sportsnet today. I'm Logan Gordon, joined by Patrick Dumont. Patrick?
Can you speak to the importance of stability in Winnipeg with GM Kyle Walters? Because you don't have to go back too long to find where this team is, you know, really at the bottom of this league.
Well, I mean, I think the continuity has served them very well. And, you know, it's not even just Kyle Walters as the GM. I mean, he took over as the interim GM back in 2013 when Joe Mack was fired midway through the season. You know, he had the interim label removed in 2014. So, you know, he's obviously been there for a long time, but, you know, you look at the head coach, well, Mike O'Shea has been with the club since 2014. Mm-hmm. It goes beyond that,
yeah.
Right? You've got the assistant GMs, Ted Gavai and Danny McManus, both of them do great work. They've been with the club in those roles since 2014. So, you know, having a GM for that long, somewhat rare, having a GM head coach combination for that tenure, you know, more rare. Having head coach, GM, and two assistant GMs who haven't been poached by any other teams, who haven't moved on to the organization, that's exceptionally rare. And it's that type of continuity that I think has really led this team to be successful. And, you know, you go even to the coordinators. I mean, Richie Hall has been with the club since 2015, right? Buck Pierce has spent his entire coaching career in Winnipeg. This is only his second year as the OC. He got promoted from the role of quarterbacks coach following Paul Appelese's departure to Ottawa. But, you know, the players have changed. There's been a lot of player turnover since 2014. But when you've got that leadership and continuity, again, not just from the GM chair, not just from the head coaching position, but, you know, good people in the organization in lower roles in management, personnel, coaching, all that kind of stuff, you know, I think that has absolutely set the Bombers up for success. And they're certainly reaping the rewards of that continuity this season.
You see it in other sports, especially in the NFL. You see like a coordinator, a team has one good season, that man's coaching, he's got a head coaching job next year. Now, you haven't seen that so much with the Bombers. We mentioned they stay around, they stick around. You know, Paul Appelese, the only one really out of this tenure getting a head coaching job elsewhere. You know, Danny McManus, his name, he's interviewed for GM spot. Is there something in Winnipeg that, you know, the guys just feel comfortable staying there? Or is it just the teams around them just aren't really down with, you know, like they interview them, but they don't go through with it, signing one of these guys?
Well, I know Ted Gavai interviewed for the Ottawa Redblacks GM job that ultimately went to Sean Burke, formerly the co-general manager of the Hamilton Tiger Cats. And he was also the finalist in Edmonton for that general managing role. And also, I'll say this, you know, the Edmonton Elks were under a budget crunch after firing, you know, just about everybody last season following that awful season they had. You know, they got rid of the president, they got rid of the general manager, they got rid of the head coach. And if those financial pressures hadn't been on Edmondson to maybe try to combine some of those titles, which of course they have with Chris Jones serving as the head coach and general manager. I'm not convinced that Ted Gavaya would not have gotten that role. So to me, I think Gavaya will be a general manager in the CFL. I don't think it will take long. Anybody in his position, I think, would want, of course, to, considering the success that he's had as an assistant, I think he would want the opportunity to go be a GM somewhere. And I don't think he'll need a long time to get that opportunity. In fact, I'm surprised it hasn't happened already, given his track record and his resume in this league.
Now, you mentioned Edmonton in there. I know that that's a club that's been through many changes since the 2019 season. Obviously, the pandemic thrown in there. How much more patience is there in Edmonton? You know, they're going on over 1,000 days without a home victory. How much more can Elks fans and this team take of what was once a really, really proud franchise in this league?
Well, I mean, if the attendance numbers are any indication, I would think that patience has already run out. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not in Edmonton. I should clarify that. I've not been to Commonwealth Stadium this year. I'm just commenting based on what I've seen.
No, I agree. I see
it
too.
The broadcast, it's not what it once was. And it's unfortunate because, you know, for many, many years, obviously the size and scope of Commonwealth Stadium works to the advantage of that community. But for many, many years, Edmonton was the CFL's leader in attendance, basically all through the 2000s. And I know they were often leaders dating back even to before I was around. And of course, the late 70s, early 80s, mm-hmm. when they won all those Grey Cups and were selling out Commonwealth Stadium or close to, even for regular season games. You know, they hosted the Winnipeg Blue Bombers in their most recent home game, and they barely cracked 20,000, which is shocking, given that just a few years ago, they were averaging 30,000 pre-pandemic. And so I think you certainly have to, if you remember that organization, look at pressing that panic button. Like I think they've gotten better on the field. They've shown improvement, right? Again, they were horrendous in week one.
Yeah.
Since then, they've won two games, which, you know, if you just watch that week one game, would be next to impossible to imagine. But I don't know how much, because they've gone the long route on this rebuild. This is not a one-year fix type of thing. They've gone the long route on this rebuild, drafting a quarterback in the first round who's young, straight out of U Sports. I do question how much appetite there is for that rebuild at Edmonton, because the fans, I think, again, looking at the attendance, looking at social media, I don't think they have any patience left over for this.
College football set to get ramped up later this month south of the border, and of course up here in U Sports. What are some? There was an article up on Three Down Nation talking about some Canadians that we should have our eyes on as we get set for next year's CFL and NFL drafts. Who might some guys we should be watching this fall?
That's a great question. This is the list was put together by my colleague JC Abbott, who does an amazing job of covering the draft for us. Mathieu Bergeron, the left tackle at Syracuse, is his number one ranked product. I do think that Bergeron will get an NFL opportunity. He's big. He moves really well for his size. He's a five-year starter at left tackle, which is very rare. But I think he's going to be one to watch for sure. Another one who will be fun to watch is Nick Bardner. He did great things at the University of Hawaii and is transferred now to Cincinnati, where, you know, the Bearcats, I mean, they made the college football playoff last
better competition,
year. Had a tremendous
for sure.
season. And so him having the opportunity to showcase his skills at an even bigger and better program that has suddenly started to get a lot of attention on the mm-hmm. national level, I think could certainly propel him to the NFL. We've seen skill position players, not just the offensive and defensive linemen that we used to 10, 20 years ago, but we've seen, you know, John Metchie III get taken in the second round of the draft. You know, we saw Josh Palmer out of Brampton, Ontario, go in the third round of the draft in 2021. We saw Chase Claypool go in the second round of the draft in 2022. These receivers from our country, born and bred here, are really starting to, you know, get that development and get the attention from the NFL that I think many of them have always deserved. And so it's exciting that, you know, I mean, I'm a former offensive lineman. I get excited to talk about offensive linemen, but I know your average football fan would much rather talk about quarterbacks and receivers. So it's exciting that these skill position guys are starting to get that attention from the NFL, and I think some of these guys are certainly going to draw attention, not just, of course, from CFL teams, but from NFL teams as well.
John, they're off this week, but I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you, how worried should Riders fans be about the health of Cody Fajardo right now?
Well, I mean, I think everybody in that province should be worried about Cody Fajardo's knee. But I'll also say this, I think they need to be worried about other aspects of that tape as well. I mean, the offensive line, I think, is arguably been the worst in the CFL to start the year, which plays into the knee problems that Cody is having, of course, because if you're not able to protect Cody effectively and he's not able to avoid pressure himself, as he may have in previous years, that is not a recipe for success. That is a recipe for failure. And, you know, I don't think they've done a good enough job giving Jamal Morrow the football, involving him in the offense. And then also the discipline. I mean, the discipline, not just the Garrett Marino hit, but you've got Duke Williams throwing helmets, right? You have him being accused of spitting, which also happened last year. He denied it both times, but, I mean, the allegations continue to come up. And right now, when you look at the standings, I mean, they're 4-4. You know, they're 500 at their bye, but they've got 10 games left. And, guys, 7 of those 10 games are against BC, Calgary, and Winnipeg. The plus side of that is it's like, okay, if you can win 5 or 6 of those games, you're in a great position to potentially leapfrog 1 or 2 teams in the West. The downside is, holy smokes, that is an unbelievably tough schedule, especially when your franchise player has MCL issues that are likely not going to resolve themselves in season with him taking the type of punishment that he's been taking. So I think Rider fans should be awfully worried about their team's status in the West Division. The plus side, the silver lining, is if you finish 4th in the West this year, you're basically guaranteed to cross over, where we all know that the path to the Grey Cup is going to be a little bit easier out East. So, you know, you don't have to finish in the top 3 of the West to make it to the Grey Cup. It's just maybe not the preferred route. When instead, you know, for example, 2 years ago, 2019, 2 seasons ago, I should say, the Riders were at the top of the West Division and able to host that West Final.
Is there, I think I know the answer to this, but I imagine the added pressure around Regina hosting the Grey Cup has fans a little bit more on edge than maybe they normally would be in that football crazy market?
Absolutely. I mean, Brandon Tamman, the GM of the Riders in 2013, when they won the Grey Cup at home, the only Grey Cup won in that, you know, in Regina in franchise history. I mean, he talked a lot about how much pressure he was under that season. And I think that, you know, if you applied truth serum to the people in that front office at the moment, they would tell you the exact same thing. They're feeling it. I mean, 4-4 in a lot of cities. You know, if Edmonton had started the season 4-4, I think Elks fans would be over the moon.
Yeah.
4-4, we'll take that, right? Ottawa, same thing. Different in Regina, right? There's a different level of pressure. There's a different level of fan expectations in any year. Most fan expectations are only going to be ramped up when they, you know, like again, 2013, the last time they hosted the Grey Cup, they won it. You know, whether it's fair or not to the coach, general manager, et cetera, in that province, fans are expecting a Grey Cup at home. They just are, you know, and there's nothing that they could do to change that. All they can do is try to bring it home. So far, they're not off to a great start. You can't write them off, the CFL, anything can happen, but they're not off to a great start. They got to come back from the bye, and they got to have find a new gear, do something. I don't know whether it's adding a player, making adjustments, but they've got to change something, because right now that team is not good enough to make noise in the playoffs.
We talked about the quarterback situation in Saskatchewan. I wanted to also ask you about what you see in Hamilton right now at the quarterback position. They used a bit of a two-headed monster approach, I guess, last week to beat Montreal and come out with the win there, but is a combination of Dane Evans and Matthew Schultz enough to get the Ticats back to where they want to be? Or is this a situation in your mind, John, where one of these guys has to take the reins, namely Dane Evans, who was handed the keys to this car when they let Jeremiah Masoli go to Ottawa, and maybe this pressure from Schultz will get him to that spot?
Well, I mean, by all accounts, I mean, even going back to last year, Jeremiah Masoli and Dane Evans had a very good relationship with one another. I think that, you know, Matthew Schultz and Dane Evans have that same approach this season. I think they are approaching this the right way, you know, in a truly collaborative way. They're doing what they need to do to win. And I think that there is, you know, there is precedent in this league. Our guy Josh Smith wrote a great article the other day talking about some of the great tandems in CFL history, whether it's, you know, I guess the most famous one being in Edmonton, Warren Moon, you know, and Tom Wilkinson back in that great run in the late 70s, early 80s. You know, it's not a traditional thing to do. It's not something that teams historically have relied on, but there is precedent for quarterback tandems having success, even 2019, right, when Winnipeg went on their run. Zach Collaros joining the team late, you know, Chris Streveler coming in and rotating, that was effective for them. And so far, this pairing seems to be working in Hamilton. Matthew Schilt certainly brings, you know, a little bit of extra flavor to that offense with his ability to move the football with his legs. But, you know, I will say this, you know, the Ticats are paying Dane Evans a lot of money. He is, I believe, the fifth highest paid player in the entire CFL. And you don't get to be the fifth highest paid player in the CFL if your team is choosing to leave you on the bench for a third of the game, right? That's not something that the Calgary Stampeders would entertain with Bo Levi Mitchell. That's not something that, you know, the BC Lions would entertain right now with Nathan Rourke. Like you're not taking your best player off the field by choice. If they're coming off the field, it's because they're hurt, and that's it. And so I think if you are the Ticats, I mean, there's some good and bad here. The good is, you know, you put two wins together in your last three games. Dane Evans seems to be, you know, responding well to the addition of Matthew Schilt to the game plan, and everyone's holding hands around the campfire. That's all good. But the downside is, look, you picked your franchise guy. They could have gone with Jeremiah Masoli, but they picked Dane Evans to be the franchise guy. They paid him a bunch of money accordingly, and thus far he's not been that guy, right? He is obviously not proven to be a number one, because otherwise he wouldn't be on the bench for a third of the snaps in these games. So I'm not saying Dane Evans can never be that guy. All I'm saying is through the first third of the season, he hasn't lived up to the test. And I think that needs to change over the course of this season if he wants to still be one of the CFL's highest paid players in 2023.
Last one for you, John, before we let you go. And I just wonder, from a league perspective, are they frustrated with the disparity between the two divisions, that the East is seemingly falling so far behind the West, and there are all these calls to, you know, sort of unify the standings and get rid of the East-West disparity now?
I mean, I'm sure behind closed doors there's frustration that there is a lack of parity, but at the same time, I think that this is largely, you know, unfortunately, I think it's a moot issue, because, you know, the CFL wants their needs there. For the owners out East, their need there to be two playoff games. They want, you know, the Toronto Argonauts and MLSE to get playoff money. Playoffs are a great way for CFL teams to make hay, because the teams don't have to pay the players. The league pays the players to play in the playoffs. And if you can sell, you know, 20, 30, 40,000 tickets to a playoff game, that's a great way for teams that normally lose money to either make money or at least, you know, recoup some of those losses. So I'm sure that East Division, you know, I'm sure the league behind closed doors is upset with the disparity, but at the end of the day, I don't think there's anything ever that they'll do about it. I personally would love to see one league with nine teams from top to bottom, and, you know, your top two teams get byes, even your top, maybe just your top one team gets a bye, and then you go from there, you know, you make your playoffs regardless of the standings, because, you know, it's heartbreaking to think that right now, one of Winnipeg, Calgary, and BC, who have been by far and away the three best teams in the CFL, one of them is going to have to go on the road in the playoffs. They're not going to get a home playoff game because the standings do not allow for that. Meanwhile, you're going to have probably a team in the East that finishes below 500 hosting a playoff game out East. But for financial reasons, political reasons, I don't think we're ever going to see change in the CFL. If we were going to see it, I think we would have already seen it.
John, thanks for the time, man. Always appreciate it. Enjoy the games this week, and we'll check in with you not too long down the road.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks for having me.
There you go. John Hodge, 3 Down Nation. You can find him on Twitter at John D. Hodge. Of course, 3 Down Nation, great place to go and get some of the latest for your CFL gear, of course. CFL news, I should say. And usually chatting with John here in the afternoons. Justin Dunk joining the guys in the morning most weeks. And, yes, CFL week kicks off tomorrow, 5:30 kickoff, Winnipeg and Montreal. Can Winnipeg move to 9-0?
Yeah, well, we go back to one of the two, Zach Collaros has lost twice as Winnipeg Blue Bombers starting quarterback. One of those losses came last year in Montreal. Al's, you know, they, you know, did not look good against Hamilton. I'm really looking forward to seeing what Machocha can do with that offense. They had an off game there against Hamilton, but we'll see. Percival Molson's been tough for Winnipeg in the last few years, and we'll see what happens tomorrow night.
They'll do it for hour one. On the other side, it's been a Blue Jays game day in the books already. They're set to get some reinforcements from the trade deadline tomorrow when they start a series against the Minnesota Twins. But did they do enough yesterday to remain a contender in the American League? Fans disagree on that one. We'll talk about that with Julia Cruz, who covers the Blue Jays for MLB.com. She joins Sportsnet today next here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.